Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 22nd of March. Joining us in just a moment, Russ Feingold. The senator has a new book, While America Sleeps, and he'll be joining us to talk about many issues, the threats that we face now, where he was on September 11, what he thinks about Saddam Hussein, why his town hall listening sessions took on a different tone in 2010. And of course, I will ask, because many of you want to know, is he going to run for governor? That's the constant question. We'll get it out of the way nice and early, and then we'll talk about a lot of issues. As you probably know, this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian in our Milwaukee studios. You, of course, get a lot out of Wisconsin Public Radio no matter when you listen. And today we're asking you to put something back in. We count on listener contributions to pay for just about everything we do, and your gift keeps the programs that you value, including this one, and I hope you do value this one. You certainly must value a conversation with Senator Feingold. Your gift now keeps the programs that you value on the air. Please make your contributions at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Last hour, the goal was 100 pledges, and we heard from 238 listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Now, this hour, our goal is 45 pledges. 45 pledges by 10 o'clock. Meeting this goal helps make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio has the money we need to fund the programs you rely on. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help us meet this goal.
The Ideas Network, of course, connects you with all kinds of experts. It's just phenomenal, the number of people who grace our airwaves each and every day. And you have a chance to pick up the phone in a moment to speak to Senator Feingold. We have fabulous authors on the air. We have politicians, the authors of many superb books. The Ideas Network brings these experts right to you. And to help make it possible, please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have something special going on this drive. Pledge any amount and you'll be entered in a drawing. It's a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the surrounding area with WPR host Larry Mueller. Find out the details and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in just a moment, we'll be speaking to Senator Russ Feingold about important issues facing this country, a special emphasis on how we need to be engaged in the world, how we need to learn foreign languages, how we need to be thinking about the threats that we face now. And for those of you who pledge $150, we thank you for that gift, and we'll be happy to send you a copy of his brand new book, While America Sleeps. Discussions like this are possible really only because of your financial support. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs. And like Kathleen mentioned, this hour, there's an added incentive. We have something very special for you.
Yes, we do. It's a copy of While America Sleeps by Senator Russ Feingold. It's for a donation of $150 or more. Ask for it right now when you make your pledge of $150. Your gift, of course, of any amount is appreciated. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. Tell us your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. Consider using your credit card. It saves time, postage, and paper, and puts your money to work right away. No matter how you choose to give or how much, take those 2 minutes right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we're still looking, Lisa, for what, 41 more pledges?
41.
41 in the next how many minutes? Help me with my math.
Let's see, 50 minutes.
50 minutes. Please help out now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ask for While America Sleeps with your pledge of $150. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a reminder, with your pledge of any amount, you'll be entered into a drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour to London, England. You can get the details and pledge now by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lorraine from Gurnee says, I love listening to WPR. I learn something every day, and I always feel that I'm getting the straight, accurate scoop. Lucy from Dodgeville says, my husband and I aim our charitable giving towards the programs that do the best work, and WPR is certainly one of them. Join Lucy, join Lorraine, even if your name doesn't begin with an L, call WPR.org 888-202-2552.
Joining us momentarily, we're just linking up with him, is Senator Russ Feingold, and he evidently is with us. He's ready. Lisa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Remember the pledge number, everybody. It's so important to the work that we do, and the work that we do is so important to you. I know that you know that. And you can pledge at 888-202-2552. We're delighted to have Senator Russ Feingold with us now on the Ideas Network, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for him. That on-air number is 800-486-8655, and the email is talk@WPR.org. I would imagine our phone lines are going to get pretty busy, so if you know what you want to talk to him about, call us right away. His new book is While America Sleeps, a wake-up call for the post-9/11 era. He writes dramatically about where he was on September 11, the ominous signs that he saw something may be coming prior to September 11, how we responded to September 11, what the threats may be at this point in time, and how we need to pay attention to the world, that we need to be engaged in foreign affairs. We need to, he suggested at one point in the book, which I think is great, that every member of Congress be assigned a country and become an expert on that so that we don't find ourselves, when something happens in a place like Tunisia, wondering what in the world is going on in Tunisia. And he writes about listening sessions, the change in tone in 2010, and many other issues. He, of course, was a member of the Senate representing Wisconsin from 1993 to 2011. He's been a visiting professor at Marquette University Law School, and also he is a distinguished visitor this year at Stanford University. In 2011, he founded Progressives United, an organization devoted to challenging the dominance of corporate money over our American democracy. I would imagine he'll have more than a few comments about Citizens United. Senator Feingold, good morning. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Great to be on the show.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. I love your idea because it amazes me when something happens in a part of the world, and boy, did it ever happen to us after September 11, that we don't know what the heck is going on in those countries, that every member of Congress ought to learn about a country.
Yeah, you know, that's just one step. I know some people think it's a strange idea, but, you know, our founders of our country intended that at least the Senate be deeply involved in this. We were supposed to approve the treaties in the Senate and all ambassadorships, and I think it might not be a bad idea to know where the country is that you're acting on. But, you know, it's all of us. I include myself in it. One of the things I say in While America Sleeps is when I went to the U.S. Senate and I went on the Foreign Relations Committee, I became a member of the Africa subcommittee. And even though I was supposedly a guy that had a decent education, I didn't know where the different countries in Africa really were. And I really knew very little about the place. And here I was, one of 20 members of the Foreign Relations Committee. So, you know, there's a real disconnect here, especially post-9/11 and the presidential debate and all the things that are going on. And the economy is only making it worse. We are distracted, understandably, in some ways. In other ways, it's just manipulation. But we haven't made the turn since 9/11 that I think we needed to make. So that's why I call the book While America Sleeps.
Yeah. You start the book with where you were on September 11, and I was amazed how chaotic this was for members of Congress. You just weren't sure where to go, and you were going to your apartment building, and it was wild, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were completely taken surprise as a people, as a government. Everybody was in this mode of sort of discounting the significance of this kind of thing. And so there were no systems in place. And, you know, it's somewhat understandable because who would have ever imagined this kind of thing happening? My problem is I think we're back in the same place in a lot of ways. And now we're on notice. And people are sort of like, oh, you know, Osama bin Laden's dead. We're all set. But the truth is, even Al-Qaeda itself, and they're only one of a number of things we should be paying attention to, they're extremely active in Africa, in Somalia, a group called Al-Shabaab, in northern Africa, a group called Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, was just involved in the death of these two Italian citizens. And in Nigeria, there's a group called Boko Haram that's carried out about 70 explosions in the last year, including a UN facility and killing 180 people on January 20th. And sort of like we've seen this movie before, why aren't people talking about it? Why is there this overconfidence that we've dealt with the problem? And again, I'm not just talking about military things. I'm not just talking about intelligence. I'm talking about everything, diplomacy, economy. We can no longer, as a nation, just sit back and let the world act on us. We have to be connected and hopefully in a positive way. I think it's fundamental for our future and our safety.
I think we've been led to believe, and maybe the president has given us this assurance, that we've taken out most of the top leadership of Al-Qaeda, and it simply is not the kind of threat that it was.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a problem there. It's less the president himself than some of his other people, John Brennan and Leon Panetta and others. There's some of the statements that were made a few weeks after bin Laden's death were way too overconfident. And do not reflect the reality, all the way from Southeast Asia through the Middle East, in places, in areas of Pakistan and in Yemen. And look, I don't want to take the attitude of let's go, you know, bomb the hell out of them or invade. In fact, my book's a large part about how foolish the invading of one country at a time strategy is. But to not be aware, as you said perfectly at the beginning, that's the point. We don't really even know where places are. As I understand it, they just scurried around in the White House when the Arab Spring came. Like, who knows something about Tunisia?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, I guess they found some guy buried in the back somewhere of the administration there, and he became sort of like a mini celebrity. And,
oh my.
You know, this, and you know, I happened to have been by chance in Tunisia twice and met with Ben Ali twice. So I sort of had some sense of this, but it was mostly by chance because we went to Tunisia on both of those trips as kind of a way to re-enter after being in places like Afghanistan and Angola. It was sort of, you know, the safe place. Of course it was a safe place because this guy had an iron hand on that country, and our only test was, is he on our side or on their side? And so we backed this guy against the aspirations of the people of the whole country, and we end up on the wrong side of history and of human rights.
So how do we deal with those threats that you've mentioned right now? How do we deal with this terrorist in France, this young guy who committed those horrible acts in the last couple weeks? How do we even know what's happening? How do we combat it? We don't want to invade countries anymore. So what do we do?
Yeah, what I try to do in While America Sleeps is make an analogy to different games that we knew as kids. That we have to stop thinking less of these threats as like a game of Risk. You know, in Risk, you invade a country, and then you have to keep your troops. Some of your troops are at all times in the game, kind of like what we've done in Afghanistan and Pakistan, Afghanistan and Iraq. And then instead, look at it like a game of Scrabble, which one of the fundamental lessons in Scrabble, and I'm not the best player, but I've encountered some great players, is you have to always think in two directions. And that's what we don't do. We have this tendency to go, okay, now it's Iran, now it's Iraq, oh, maybe today it's France. Instead of realizing if the issue is Al-Qaeda, it's an international network with chapters in Africa, chapters in Southeast Asia and the Philippines, chapters in the Middle East, chapters in Great Britain. And we need to think systemically. Basically, almost every country in the world doesn't want Al-Qaeda around. That's pretty much a consensus. So it's not a question of invading. It's a question of using our resources to connect with those in those countries who are willing to help us make sure we have a better relationship with the country and the people in the country, understanding what's happening, particularly in Islamic communities, to see any signs of connection to the group, and to try to intervene in a positive, peaceful way in advance and head off some of these problems rather than waiting until we get attacked.
Is it right for us? I mean, we've done several shows on Afghanistan from different points of view recently, most recently because of the massacre, and a very moving show earlier this week from a young man who had served in Iraq to talk about what can happen to a soldier who's been deployed four times, five times, six times. Is it right for this massacre to prompt a really heartfelt discussion about what our role should be continuing in Afghanistan, and what do you think our role should be in Afghanistan?
Well, this one is frankly just mind-boggling to me, that this discussion is occurring now. In 2008, when we were waiting for figure out who was going to be the new president, I saw news reports that there was going to be a proposal to increase our troop presence in Afghanistan by 30 or 40,000. And I remember thinking, okay, I supported that invasion to go after Al-Qaeda. But we don't even think that Al-Qaeda is operating there particularly. It's certainly, we thought the headquarters was more in Pakistan and other places at the time. So I remember thinking, well, I don't want this to look partisan. Whoever is the president, I want to know why would we do that? So I called a bunch of generals and admirals and others off the record and said, well, what's our purpose in Afghanistan? I'll tell you, as I say in While America Sleeps, every one of them had a different reason. They weren't connected, and it had nothing to do really with the reason we went there in the first place. So I wrote a piece for the Christian Science Monitor saying, you know, shouldn't we question this? And then when President Obama won, he did undertake a lengthy review of whether it was a good idea to not only continue this, but increase the troops. And I was, you know, hopeful that he would make a different decision. Vice President Biden is well known to have said, wait a minute, this doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, I think he made a bad decision there. And so here we are years later. I proposed the first timeline to get us out of Afghanistan years ago. There's nothing different in a positive sense at all. We are just there expending resources for something that is impossible and essentially makes no sense. It's an enormous tragedy. And it's hard when I watch TV to say, hear these arguments. And they were identical to the things I heard from people back then. And yet, as Americans, because we have a volunteer army, we tend not to get as aroused about this stuff as we used to during Vietnam. And so what happens is people just sort of push it aside. And this war, which is already the longest war in the history of this country, just keeps grinding away in a way that really is sapping us and makes no sense. Another chapter in the book is called In for a Penny, In for a Pound. This idea that the only way we can affect policy or the situation in a foreign country is by invading it and staying there basically forever. This is a huge flaw in our policy and our strategy. And I have to compliment President Obama on this one. He did a much better job on this on Libya than invading. He used the right calibration of what we could do with the international community and those who were fighting Gaddafi on the ground. Instead of saying, let's invade, he said, let's push this guy over the tipping point. That's a lot closer to the kind of thing we should be doing than just staying forever in a place like Afghanistan, which, of course, history teaches us is the last place you would want to be involved in something like this.
One more question for me, and then we'll go to phone calls. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Senator Russ Feingold is our guest, and his new book is While America Sleeps, a wake-up call for the post-9/11 era. You have some very interesting chapters about 2010 and your listening sessions all over the state of Wisconsin, which I found just really interesting. You write that there was strong support for universal health care. You've been a proponent of that for a long time, and it had almost always been the most frequent discussion point at those listening sessions back to 1995. You noticed a big change. People started bringing you copies of the Constitution. You, of all people, here's a copy of the Constitution. Why don't you read it, Senator Feingold? What happened? How did the tone change? How did those meetings become so nasty? Why is it that health care reform, of all things, was the tipping point here?
Well, it's just one of the most intriguing and difficult things to figure out. I remember being, of course, in Washington and looking down the mall the day that President Obama was sworn in, and the whole country seemed to be peaceful and proud of this moment. There was no hint, really, of this kind of a sudden reaction. And then within weeks or months of the inauguration, people started coming to my town meetings around the state, which I'd been doing for 16 years, and where universal health care had always been the number one thing that people wanted. And people were at tea bags off of their hats, and I was up in northern Wisconsin, and I thought, is this a new, you know, fishing hat kind of style? And I, you know, just sort of, they started saying, well, you know, this is, country is going to hell, and of course, I was talking about the bailouts, the TARP, which I had opposed, and talking about what happened on Wall Street, where I didn't vote for any of this stuff, and I, you know, I was interested in it because they were different people. But then it turned into this really harsh attack on Barack Obama, before he had even done anything, that he wasn't born in the United States,
right,
that he was a socialist, that he was going to do all these crazy things. And they started making up stories about what would be in his health care bill. Just completely made it up. There wasn't even a health care bill yet. And people started hearing about death panels and how their personal banking accounts could be accessed. The law didn't say anything. The client, in fact, there wasn't even a proposal yet. And so, so this move became very harsh. A lot of the people that used to come to our town meetings who enjoyed giving their comments every year or just listening, they were silent or they didn't come. And essentially it was an effective intimidation of debate that the Tea Party generated. And it's part of my overall theme of why America sleeps. I mean, not only do we make a mistake in Iraq, not only were civil liberties, things, and other issues harmed by the exploitation of 9/11, we even got to the point where we were basically put back to sleep on foreign policy by the combination of the economic collapse and then the narrowing of the debate away from even social issues by the Republicans, conservatives, and Tea Party people. But also, they didn't want to talk about foreign policy. They just wanted to hang the economy around the president's neck. And, of course, it was a pretty smart strategy, if you like cynical strategies, because it led to a big electoral success. As I said in the book, it's one of the reasons I had time to write the book.
Right.
Right. It was pretty darn effective. So this is part of how the basically the nation's been, anesthetized, tranquilized, whatever you want to say, into not even being worried anymore about what happened 10 years ago. And I thought we all decided at that point, let's at least get together on understanding the rest of the world as Americans instead of it being partisan. So, yeah, the Tea Party movement and what happened in terms of all that played a major role in the history of where we're at right now.
Senator Russ Feingold is our guest, and we're going to welcome phone calls. Our lines are filled, but you can get through eventually, I hope. 800-486-8655 is the number. His new book is While America Sleeps, A Wake-Up Call for the Post-9/11 Era. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Keep another number in mind today because we are in our spring pledge drive, which is extremely important. And for a pledge, a gift of $150, we're very happy to send you a copy of Senator Feingold's book, While America Sleeps. That number is the pledge number, 888-202-2552. And thank you very much. Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Senator Feingold. Now, my husband and I read your book, While America Sleeps. We came to the conclusion that you'd make a great governor.
I knew that was going to come up.
Or that if Secretary of State Clinton would retire and if President Obama gets reelected, that he would select you as Secretary of State because you seem to understand the problems between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Now, I feel that the Palestinians should have a homeland. Now, if both countries can't agree on some borderlines, that they can live together in peace, you're never going to stop this conflict from growing out of control. Now, do you think there's ever going to have a peaceful solution to that conflict?
Well, I sure hope so, and I strongly believe that there needs to be a Palestinian state. And I hope that, of course, President Obama is reelected. Despite my disagreements, I'm co-chairing his campaign with 30 other people. I believe President Obama cares deeply about this issue, and he will renew the efforts to negotiate what should be a very doable compromise. It is not, these issues between the Palestinians and Israel are seem very intractable, but really it isn't as difficult as people think. It has a lot to do with the geopolitics and the game plan that goes on throughout both Arab world and as well as the West. And one of the interesting things now is that a number of the Arab countries are a lot less worried about Israel now and a lot less angry about Israel than they are about Iran, rift between the Sunni and the Shia. So there's an opportunity here for, in sort of enlightened self-interest, for both Israel and the various Arab states, as well as the Palestinian people, to make an agreement because of the nervousness about what Iran's intention is in the region. So I'm hoping that happens. And again, here's a great example of the foolishness of not having a serious discussion about foreign policy issues in this country. Now, Newt Gingrich informed us recently that the Palestinians aren't a real people, he said. And his reason was that they were part of the Ottoman Empire. So I looked up how many people aren't real people, if that's the test. Somebody better tell the Russians and the Greeks and the Bulgarians and the Iraqis that because they were part of the Ottoman Empire, they weren't real people. They're real people. This is an obnoxious way to talk about people who have waited for decades to have their state. I think the Palestinians absolutely must recognize Israel's right to exist as a fundamental part of this process. But it is also wrong to deny the humanity and the rights and the right to a state of the Palestinian people.
I must ask you, because we put notice up yesterday on Facebook that you were going to be on the show, and lo and behold, what do you think the question was most people wanted to ask you? Of course, they haven't read your book yet, but they will, and then they'll ask other questions. But a lot of people want to know, and this is exemplary of the kinds of questions. Jay on Facebook, why won't you run for governor?
Well, first, let me say it's so kind and flattering that people are asking me to do that. I can't believe I reached a point in my life where people are coming to me and saying, please run for governor. I so much wanted to be involved in public life, and I had that privilege. I did it for 28 years. My family and I said after the election, you know, let's take a break. Well, let's devote some time to our family. I've got a new grandson.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. Izzy's his name. And oh. I've been on the road and traveling and doing this sort of thing and being in public life for 28 years, and the people of the state told me to take a break. So that's exactly what I'm doing. And that doesn't mean I won't do it again. And let me say this. It's time for all of us to focus on those who are running. And there are some very good people who are either running or going to run. In particular, I think that Kathleen Falk and Tom Barrett, both of whom I know well, both of whom I admire, I don't know if Tom's going to run or not, they have serious executive experience. And we have a situation here, it's unusual, where the person basically has to walk into the governor's office the next day when Scott Walker's defeated. I think that's an important part of the argument. So I am flattered and thrilled that people speak with me this way. I may well want to serve the people of the state again if they want to have me in the future. But let's all work on trying to defeat Scott Walker. Now, that is the mission. It is urgent. It's soon. And that's the key. The issue is Scott Walker, not whether or not I'm going to run for governor.
Linda, thanks for your call. Cindy in Milwaukee. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, I'm a member of Citizens United and of Progressives United. I'm sorry. And
yes,
really appreciate all the work.
There is a difference.
Progressives United. One of my questions is really about Citizens United, and I don't really feel that we're asleep. I feel that we are maxed out in the negativity and financially. I mean, those of us who, you know, I mean, I'm still active and working on progressive campaigns, but I can't donate the kinds of dollars that I did to federal election efforts because I'm donating to the recall effort. And I feel that the negativity is keeping people away. I don't think that we're asleep. I think that we're overwhelmed.
Senator Feingold.
You know what? That's a very fair comment. Mm. And I thought a lot about that when I was writing the book. Sometimes I said things like, well, maybe it's better to call it a nightmare, you know, than being asleep. And we are overwhelmed. The truth is that a situation that was largely caused by those who are in the very small minority, the very wealthy in this country, is being blamed on the rest of us, and the rest of us are suffering, and yet people are trying to exploit it politically to help themselves. So we do have a situation where people are overwhelmed. People were genuinely harmed tremendously by what Scott Walker and the Republican legislature did. People were genuinely harmed through the mortgage crisis and what Wall Street did. And, you know, I know from many families that I know, friends and others, where the job loss at all levels and the lack of economic security is huge. So, yes, it's part of what's going on is simply a function of people being overwhelmed, so concerned about what's happening domestically. But some of it's manipulation, too, trying to blame the president before he's done anything, trying to turn everything into a slogan and complain that the recovery isn't fast enough as if it's all the Democrats' fault. And that all leads to a focus just on that as opposed to a focus on both the legitimate things we can do together domestically and also working internationally. But I couldn't agree with you more. People are scrapped. They don't have money. They don't have time. It's all part of this picture. So whether the analogy is while America sleeps or while America has a nightmare or whatever you want to call it, your point about us being overwhelmed is extremely valid.
The other thing that's happening, Senator Feingold, and you're so aware of this, you write about it quite eloquently in those town hall meetings, and we get it every day because we're doing Issues on the Air. There's this really nastiness going on in society. The fact that, you know, people question where in the world the President of the United States is born and even begin to have a conversation about that. The fact that Congress just is really at odds and Democrats and Republicans aren't working together and everybody's just darn mad about things. I don't know how you, what do you do about that?
Well, you know, it is shocking to me, having entered politics in this state, who had a very genteel kind of politics, and having been in the United States Senate in the early 90s, you know, things weren't always this way. This is a violent turn to a unpleasant and harsh way of speaking with each other, as if we're not all part of the same community. It's damaging to any society. It's particularly damaging to a huge and diverse country like the United States. We have to, as Americans, demand a different kind of political figure. Instead of rewarding people for being harsh and negative toward their opponents, we need to get back to what I thought was going on in the 90s when I worked with John McCain. People seemed thrilled that people were working across party lines instead of accusing them of being traitors. Democrats didn't yell at me for working with John McCain, and generally, until it got to be a different kind of scenario, McCain gained support on the Republican side as well for being willing to do something about money in politics. So I think if people say, look, I'm going to support you if you show me you're working with the other side, that can improve. And I think if Obama's reelected, which I think he will, I think they're going to say, wait a minute, we used everything but the kitchen sink to discredit this guy from day one. And it failed. The tactic failed. They couldn't defeat him even in a difficult economy. I think that could lead to a different era. Maybe that's too optimistic, but that's how I feel. And an illustration of this, I thought, I was asked to come out to Stanford for the last quarter, which was a wonderful experience. A lot of Badgers going to school out there. And I thought, the only thing I'm wondering is, how am I going to tell young people to run for office, you know, given the climate, given the mood, given the way people are treated? And what encouraged me and made me feel much better is how many students came up to me and said, how did you do this? I'm interested in running for office. Positive, bright young people from all over the country. So I came away from there thinking, you know, this generation that's in college now is tough enough and desires.
Hello? Hello? Oh, we seem to be right in the middle of an important sentence. He'll get back to what he's telling the young people at Stanford in just a moment. Senator Russ Feingold is our guest, in case you're wondering who we're talking to. He has a new book, and we're also in a pledge drive, so let me remind you while we reconnect with him that for those of you, you who can give us a gift of $150, we'll be happy to allow you to keep this conversation going on in your head and with your friends, because you can read the book. We'll send it to you for that pledge, While America Sleeps, A Wake-Up Call for the Post-9/11 Era. Senator Russ Feingold is the author, and he is our guest for a little while longer here. The book covers all kinds of territory. The first part deals with 9/11, and there's so much that we won't have a chance, even though our interview is fairly long, to get to the response to the anthrax in Washington, D.C., and how members of Congress perhaps overreacted to that, but it changed their whole worldview. We lost you in the middle of a sentence as you were telling the young person about politics, so please continue.
Yeah, I don't know where we cut out there, but, you know, what I was saying is I got so much positive feedback from young people at Stanford, some of whom were from Wisconsin, who said, look, I want to run for office. Tell me how you did it. How do you do this? And I said, well, you know, it's a different time than when I got involved. But I was so sort of lifted up by the fact that this generation is sort of looking at us like saying, why are you behaving like this? We would do it differently. So I'm still young enough, I think, that hopefully I can still help change the mood again. But that we have, I think, the generation coming up who's looking at this and saying, you know, we really don't feel this way about each other. So one thing I did was I said, could I please meet with a group of the leading conservatives on the Stanford campus off the record? And these guys did it. They came in, like 20 of them. These are the big conservatives on the campus. And we sat down, an off-the-record conversation, and it was terrific. They talked with me for a while, but then they sort of talked among themselves. And I got a chance to hear some of the feelings and differences, you know, how they feel about the Tea Party, how they feel about Occupy Wall Street, and it was totally civil. And I just have hope that if maybe the younger people can guide us back to acting like grown-ups. I know it's sort of a reversal of normal roles.
I also want to ask you, because this this case of this young African-American in Florida is getting so much attention nationally and really once again starting this conversation, I am amazed how many African-American mothers and fathers have talked about the messages they have to give their teenagers before they go out in the world, how to deal with police, how to be extra polite, et cetera, that you have to be taught that in order to have a safe life. What do you think of the national conversation as a result of this horrible incident? It's growing in this country, isn't it? And we have an African-American president, but we still got race issues in America.
Well, it's just critical that this conversation occur, and with the intensity it's occurring. It is reality that African-Americans have this concern about their kids. It is reality that they have these conversations that whites almost never have to have. This is completely unacceptable in this time in our history, and it's a function of the kind of politics that tries to divide people rather than bring them together. It creates an environment where people feel enabled to separate themselves, whether it's in gated communities or other places, so that they might think when they see an African-American, oh, that person's up to no good. Why are they here? How did we get to this point after the civil rights movement, all the changes, as you say, having a black president? You would think we'd be doing better on the ground on this issue. So sometimes an incident like this, as horrendous as it is, can really help change people's attitudes. And the discussion that is occurring is one of the most important ones we can have. No African-American youth in this country should have to have that kind of fear of simply walking around freely in our society.
Right. Richard in Eau Claire, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. I want to thank both of you for your service over the years. It's been fantastic having both of your voices out there. I have a question regarding the Patriot Act, and how does a document of that depth and basically an assault on our Constitution get dropped on a table shortly after a crisis, either real or imagined? And do you see a parallel to that and the documents offered up by ALEC to Governor Walker in his assault on the unions in Wisconsin? It seems that there, again, are just these ready-made documents that, and thank you for calling a stop to things, to read the document and being the one voice in the wild. But is there a connection there?
You know, there, I think you make an interesting point. In both situations, of course, post-9/11 fear and today's economic difficulties are regarded by some people not as moments for people to work together, but as opportunities to achieve agendas that they could not have achieved in other situations. So in the book, While America Sleeps, one of the chapters is called An Old Wish List of the FBI. That's the story of the USA Patriot Act being jammed through not only by the Bush administration, but by a Democratic-controlled Senate. It's not my phrase, though. An old wish list of the FBI is what Bob Novak, one of the most conservative columnists of our time, called the bill. The FBI and the law enforcement people went, oh, good, this bill's going through. Who's going to vote against this? Let's put all these things about sneak and peek searches and looking at people's library records in there, even if it doesn't have to do with terrorists. So it was an exploitation of the moment, and that's why one of the themes of my book is about how 9/11's been exploited, and we've gone back to sleep with regard to protecting our civil liberties and our Constitution. Now, your analogy is great, because what's happened here is ALEC, Walker, Koch brothers and others are saying, oh, good, we won these elections by exploiting people's feelings about the economy, wrongly blaming Barack Obama and the Democrats for everything that happened. This is our chance to jam through all this right-wing legislation, such as taking away people's legitimate voting rights in the form of very difficult ID requirements and the like. It is exploitation. It's cynical. And it's the kind of thing that has to be rejected on a bipartisan basis. But I think it's a pretty good analogy.
I want you to spend a little more time talking about Citizens United, because you must be appalled by what's going on with the amount of money and the amount of influence that corporations and unions are having now in politics. I heard you rail on the Stewart Show a little bit a couple weeks ago, so you can rail again now if you would like.
I rail at will on this one.
I imagine.
It's unbelievable. People go, well, how do you feel about McCain-Feingold being overturned? This is what's amazing. McCain-Feingold is the only thing that's left. It's like we put this brick on a wall that was already built. And we added the prohibition on members of Congress raising money for the political parties. So that's still the law. But the wall beneath it was smashed by the Supreme Court in Citizens United. It wasn't McCain-Feingold they overturned. They overturned the Tillman Act, which was something signed by Teddy Roosevelt in 1907 that said that corporations can't use the treasuries for political campaigns. And unions have the same prohibition that was put into effect in 1947 in the Taft-Hartley Act. The Supreme Court gutted those provisions. And for the first time in our lifetime, the way I like to explain it, when you buy a gallon of gas or some detergent or toothpaste, for the first time in your lifetime, your money can be used immediately for a political candidate who is the opposite, who has the opposite views of yours on everything. This is a stunning attack on our democracy. It's unprecedented since the Gilded Age, when corporate power was so great. Now I like to call it Gilded Age on steroids, because what corporations can do now is even more frightening. They're not so dependent on American workers and farmers and small business as they used to be. Now they can just get it done overseas. So their power to manipulate our democracy and exploit monopoly power and the like is much greater than it was even 100 years ago when these laws were originally passed. So this is a crisis for our democracy. It's very serious, and I think even the Supreme Court is beginning to notice that what they did here was far more than maybe they even intended.
So they will overturn it at some point, or it will take a change in the makeup of the Supreme Court?
My view has been, up until about 6 weeks ago, that it would take a change in the Supreme Court, and that's why I want to get President Obama reelected, because the people he appoint, we don't know what they'd do on this case, but at least we know they wouldn't be locked down, as I think the Republican nominees are on this issue. But what I'm hearing now, what I'm feeling now, is from some comments that are coming out of the court, is that they're beginning to realize that something has happened that is way more than they intended, and there is a chance that they'll reconsider this. And so I think that this is an opportunity to consider turning it over in either way, and it has to be done.
Senator Feingold, are you happy?
Am I happy?
Yeah.
I'm extremely happy. I'm not happy about what's happened with the situation around the world. I'm not happy about our economy. I'm not happy about all the acrimony in politics. But personally, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, and I'm having a blast. But I recognize that it's important for me to continue to work on these causes, because I want other people to have a good life. I just happen to be very fortunate, and I love being in Wisconsin. Even though I travel a lot, I'm based here full-time for the first time in 18 years, and I absolutely love it here. So, things are good.
And when you say, final question, that you think about entering public service, not that what you're doing now is not public service, what do you think about that? It was an interesting suggestion that you become Secretary of State. That would be a good job.
Well, all of these other things besides running for office are up to other people. You know, if somebody wants me to serve in some capacity, whether it be in administration, in an academic setting, I'm willing to listen. At the moment, I'm, you know, very busy with the book and
right.
Progressive United and teaching, but I'm not ready to retire. So let me know if you hear of anything.
We'll do that. Thank you so much for being with us. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Senator Russ Feingold, the book is While America Sleeps, A Wake-Up Call for the Post-9/11 Era. We're happy to have had a chance to speak with him. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and as you probably know, we are in our all-important spring pledge drive. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me here in our studios in Milwaukee, and we're asking you to think about how much you rely on WPR's Ideas Network for enlightening, informative discussions. I must say, as we were speaking with Senator Feingold, it's hard to nail an interview with him, and Rhonda did that, and I'm so glad she did. I know many of you relish a chance to be able to speak with him, and you will only find that for this amount of time on this kind of station. This station, not this kind of station, this station. We're here right now to remind you that we rely on you to keep programs like this one and these kinds of interviews on the air. A gift of any amount will make a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs that you count on. Please make a gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. well. We're looking to get just a few more pledges in the next 10 minutes. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying the wide-ranging conversation with Senator Russ Feingold about foreign policy and what happened to his listening sessions and health care and his future plans and his new book, While America Sleeps, a wake-up call for the post-9/11 era. And if you can pledge $150, we'll send you that book as a thank you. Please take a few minutes to make this hour and many hours to come possible and put a value on the programs you enjoy every day. Make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on Wisconsin Public Radio. Consider asking for While America Sleeps as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listener support is a big part of why this show is available to you right now and why we've been at this for a long, long time together. We've done this a long time. Please make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. A constant town hall listening session, statewide listening session, and beyond. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with 2 minutes of your time. Just give us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe. We don't share it with any other organization.
And that's a good thing. And your gift supports the stories and the programs that really keep you connected to the world and to each other. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You get value from this program and also Joy Cardine, Larry Mueller, the Saturday Special, and many others you've come to rely on.
It's really as though WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. Support the exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lately, listeners and members have expressed concern about funding for public broadcasting. We understand your concern, and we're committed to providing great radio now and into the future. If you can, we invite you to help with a larger gift at the leadership level of $1,200 or more. To set up a leadership pledge, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And as always, gifts of any amount are greatly appreciated.
As you well know, on the Ideas Network, you hear a variety of viewpoints from different guests, and listeners bring this wonderful, unique perspective to the conversation. I must compliment you. I can't tell you how often people say to us, our guests, that right after we hang up, you have a terrific audience. They just ask such great questions, and indeed, you do. And when you hear yourself saying, yesterday on WPR, I heard, that may be a little indication that it's time to make a pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we just need a couple more pledges in the next 5 or 6 minutes. And thank you so much if you've already given. If not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And please remember, you can get Senator Feingold's new book. The title is While America Sleeps, for your pledge of $150.
Also, everyone who pledges this drive, will be entered in a drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour to England. You could be the lucky winner when you make your pledge of any amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to pledge to participate in that. You can send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR England Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard or by making a pledge right now. Again, the pledge number is 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org.
You are a part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners. And maybe you have been for a long time. And now you can become part of the community of members, people who loyally support the programs they value.
Remember, your contribution of any amount will make you a member. And it's not about how much you can do alone. It's about how much we can do together. Please make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for just a couple more pledges in the next 2 or 3 minutes. Help out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it's a special premium this hour. Russ Feingold was our guest for the hour, and his book is While America Sleeps, and it's a good one. With your pledge of $150, we will be happy to send you a copy of Russ Feingold's new book. Please pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And remember, with your pledge of any amount, you'll be entered in a drawing for a trip to two on a garden tour to London, England. Get the details and pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you so much, Lisa. Thanks, everybody, for your pledges. It's very, very important that we hear from you this hour so we can continue to bring you the kinds of conversations. And I really believe you just don't hear them anywhere else. Where in the course of a day are you going to hear an interview with Russ Feingold? And now we're going to talk about great books. And you'll have your reading list compiled for you for the next, who knows, 10 years. It's just something you don't find anywhere else. Here it is. We need your support. 888-202-2552 is the number. And the website is, Lisa?
WPR.org.
WPR.org. And thanks, everybody, to all of you who have pledged. We've had some nice comments from people.
Claire from Milwaukee says that WPR provides top reporting. It's balanced, professional, and interesting.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. You are a big part of this show. Thanks, Lisa Nalbandian, for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour with Senator Russ Feingold, Cynthia Schuster for doing on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee, and thanks, everybody. Again, the number, you can keep pledging. That book is $150 thank you gift for those of you who can pledge that much. We will send you Russ Feingold's book. Thanks. News is coming up.